Hello, and welcome to this Novartis educational event. My name is Jane Mast. I am a medical director at Novartis and a former dermatology PA of 20 years, along with the past president of SDPA. I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Dr. Jonathan Rodriguez, and we're very excited tonight to take you on this deep dive and an exploration in chronic spontaneous urticaria. Jonathan, do you want to say hello?
Hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Rodriguez. I am an allergist and a medical director at Novartis. Both Jane and I appreciate your interest in learning more about chronic spontaneous urticaria. Back to you, Jane.
Thanks so much. So we're going to dive deep today. I do have to have a little disclaimer that this content is consistent with disease state information and can be used for proactive communication. So what are we going to do today? Our objectives are to discuss the patient burden associated with chronic spontaneous urticaria, also called CSU, and the importance of early diagnosis. We're also going to review the role that Bruton's tyrosine kinase, or BTK, plays in the pathophysiology of CSU. So we're going to cover an overview of CSU disease, and then the mechanism of disease, some of the management, and again, the role of BTK in CSU. Okay, so what do we do when we see a patient with urticaria? Sometimes I think it can be daunting, especially in derm. Half of you may say, I refer them to allergist, right? But you don't have to do that because it is really a very simple diagnosis and it's not as complicated as we may think. So the most important question to ask patients when they present with urticaria is how long they've been experiencing the hives, angioedema, or both, right? So acute urticaria is defined as hives and/or angioedema that lasts less than or equal to 6 weeks. Acute urticaria is the self-limiting form of urticaria, often related to infection, sometimes due to drugs or food. Once the hives and/or angioedema have lasted beyond the 6 week mark, now we're talking about chronic urticaria. And so that's really the first differentiating factor when looking at how to make this diagnosis. Then when we look at chronic urticaria, we look at these things being broken into chronic spontaneous urticaria, CSU, or inducible urticaria, which you may hear referred to as CINDU. So for chronic spontaneous urticaria, the flares may reoccur more days than not, and for more than 6 weeks. In this type of urticaria, there's really no specific cause. For chronic inducible urticaria, that's when we think about dermographia, we think about, okay, when they exercise, they're getting hives, cold air or water, the sun, solar urticaria. So that's when we talk about chronic inducible urticaria. But here's the key. If they don't have an inducible cause, right, then we're squarely in this CSU bucket. Okay, so moving on, what do we do? The first thing we need to do is take a thorough history. This is the most important step in the diagnosis of CSU. We want to ask the patients, you know, how long these hives have been going on. We want to ask if the individual lesions themselves persist for more than 24 hours. Are the hives associated with any symptoms? Is there itching or burning? Is there any swelling in other areas that could suggest angioedema? Are there burning associated with lesions of angioedema? You know, has your eye swollen up lately? And then is there any family history of similar symptoms? This is going to become key as well. When we look at the physical exam, I think it's very clear, you know, you're going to see these sharply demarcated wheals, sometimes with reflex erythema. And then if they have angioedema, you're going to see this skin color deep swelling. Okay, looking at this chart. I know it looks a little complicated, but in actuality, the diagnosis of CSU is really straightforward. And this chart represents the diagnostic algorithm of patients presenting with hives and or angioedema for more than 6 weeks. So on one side of the chart, you're going to see patients that present with wheals or hives. And the first question we're asking is this good review of systems is, have you had any recurrent unexplained fevers, joint or bone pain? And if the answer is yes, then we have to think about autoinflammatory diseases. The next question is, how long have these individual lesions persisted? If it's more than 24 hours, again, we can have a patient circle the lesion and monitor it to see if that particular lesion disappears within 24 hours. We can look for some violet appearance or ecchymosis. And then if that is the case and we suspect urticarial vasculitis, then of course a biopsy is appropriate. If the lesions do not persist longer than 24 hours, taking this clear history on if the symptoms are inducible is key. So again, asking, you know, is there anything that brings these lesions on? Does it happen when you exercise? Does it happen when you get in cold water? All of these things. We can do the test. We often, in my office, used to use just a tongue depressor, and you can write your name or tic-tac-toe on the patient's body. And then if it hives up, then you can confirm dermographia. So if there's no inducible cause found, though, from this history, then we can make the diagnosis of CSU. And then on the other side of the chart, this is really for patients that present just with angioedema. So the first question there should be, are they taking an ACE inhibitor? If they are, a trial discontinuation should be implemented. And if there's, if it goes away, right, then it was ACE inhibitor induced angioedema. But if the patient is not on an ACE inhibitor, we need to ask them about family history of similar symptoms. And if they do have a family history, we need to consider hereditary forms of angioedema. If they do not have a family history, we again ask if the symptoms are inducible. And if the answer is no, then we can diagnose CSU. So again, I think it's rather simple and straightforward. And this is really a clinical diagnosis made by asking a review of system and a history, no testing needed. So if we dive into the clinical features of CSU, hives, I think we're all very familiar with the presentation of a hive, but it presents again as these sharply demarcated superficial central swelling. It can have reflex erythema. The wheals are well defined. They're raised with a smooth surface, and they can range in size. So they can be a few millimeters to many centimeters in diameter. The shape can also vary. So some are just round, but they can also be polycyclic, which is overlapping circles. They can be annular or geographic, like map-like. They're randomly distributed on the body and may affect any site. The key here is they last less than 24 hours and they leave no marks behind when they disappear. However, excoriation can be present on the skin due to the unrelentless itching of this disease. Again, if we think about differential diagnosis in derm, we would also consider erythema multiforme, which of course is not going to disappear within 24 hours and presents with more target-like lesions, urticarial dermatitis, which presents both with urticaria and eczematous lesions. And then particularly in the elderly, sometimes early bullous pemphigoid can look hive-like, but eventually these develop tense blisters. Urticaria pigmentosa can present with brown spots that urticate, again, a different look. And then we already kind of covered urticaria vasculitis. Angioedema, on the other hand, is this kind of short-lived but deep dermal or subcutaneous or submucosal swelling. It really presents, instead of with itching, more numbness, tingling, burning, and sometimes can be very painful, It can affect the lips, eyes, cheeks, and extremities. And it's very slow compared to hives to resolve. So this one can take 72 hours for resolution. Okay, so we'll go to the next slide here. What are the demographic features of CSU? The global estimated prevalence of CSU has been increasing in recent years, and it's estimated that 1% of the US population experiences CSU. So it's actually quite a lot. And the overall lifetime prevalence is 4.4%. And I think if you talk to people that work in urgent care or primary care, I mean, hives in general is something that they see very, very often. And then chronic spontaneous urticaria is actually very common as well. So the onset of symptoms is typically between the ages of 30 and 50 years old, and women are affected twice as often as men. So when we look at, you know, who has what, right? Between 33 and 67% of patients will actually have both hives and angioedema together. So sometimes we're not asking the questions about angioedema, but we may want to consider asking, you know, have you ever had any swelling or things like that in patients that present with hives? And then 29 to 65% will have the hives alone. And then there is a subtype that 1 to 13% have angioedema alone. Now, those may not present to derm, but they possibly can. So again, the cumulative weighted average estimates for spontaneous remission of this disease at 1 in 5 years are 17% and 45% respectively. But think about that, that is more than 50% of patients do not go into remission after 5 years. And so this is a chronic disease and does need management. So when we talk about delays in diagnosis of CSU, diagnostic delays are actually pretty common, and they're driven by many factors. One is inadequate knowledge of this disease. So a lot of people, you know, think they know hives, right? But then they've never heard of chronic spontaneous urticaria. There is often a lack of knowledge in the primary care and urgent care space that can lead to patients having multiple unnecessary tests or workups. We often hear stories of patients being put on extreme elimination diets or changing medications unnecessarily. And this can, again, you know, give them delays in treatment, but also you're kind of chasing, you know, something that you shouldn't be chasing. So when we look at unnecessary testing, actually allergy and laboratory testing tops the list. And as a whole, this causes a lot of unnecessary costs that result in very low clinical value, with only 0.16% of tests resulting in any improved clinical outcome. So you can imagine, you know, this is costly for patients, right? From a actual monetary standpoint, but it's also costly because they have to go and get these tests and they're not gonna really yield anything. This also results then in this delayed care, particularly amongst guideline-based care, where patients are often cycled on antihistamines or even worse, corticosteroids without improvement of their disease. This all adds up to a 24-month delay from symptom onset to diagnosis in chronic spontaneous urticaria. So when we talk about a patient journey, what we're really talking about is a patient story. And I'll tell this story of a patient that I saw probably like 7 or 8 years ago when I was in practice, but he was actually a PA as well. And he came to us for help after spending many months being treated ineffectively and kind of bouncing from different doctors, urgent cares, even ERs. He described waking up one morning with hives over most of his body. And being an avid outdoorsman, he assumed that he had gotten into something or gotten bit by bugs. He went to first the drugstore, right? Like all of us do, and self-medicate. And he bought like all of the over-the-counter poison ivy treatments and pretty much all the antihistamines that Walgreens had. But after a week of not getting better, he went to the urgent care where he was given oral steroids and antihistamines and just diagnosed with hives. Of course, he felt better on the steroids, right? But unfortunately, what happens is eventually you have to come off the steroids and the hives came back with a vengeance. At this point, he had stopped hiking. He was changing his diet. He was having trouble working and concentrating. And he was very severely impacted by the relentless itching. So weeks went by. He saw his primary care, who again changed the antihistamines. And he actually gave him sedating antihistamines at this time, which then he was questioning whether he could really work because he was just so tired and trying to see patients. But he was also having trouble sleeping at night. Even though he was on these, sedating antihistamines, at night when your mind is still, and we know this from all the patients we've seen, is like itching is the worst at night because your mind is not distracted. So he was up all night itching and then very tired during the day. So he made an appointment actually with a local dermatologist who took one look at him and said, "You need to see an allergist." And it was while waiting for the allergy appointment, which at the time was about a 2-month wait, that he actually got in to see our practice. And that's when we actually diagnosed him with CSU. So you can imagine, that was a very long and kind of arduous journey. And that was someone that was a healthcare provider. So imagine someone that doesn't know how to navigate the healthcare system or doesn't know really what they're experiencing or what they're going through. So this is what we call the patient journey. And there are some unique things to every patient's journey, right? But some of the things that are similar is this period of self-medication where people either turn to Google or they turn to now TikTok, unfortunately, or Walgreens, and they self-medicate. They seek a cause. This may result in them changing diets and habits unnecessarily. And they see multiple providers before actually getting a CSU diagnosis. And then once diagnosed, the patient still needs adequate treatment to get relief. So we know the patient journey is pretty arduous with this disease. And when we talk about quality of life in patients with CSU, based on the last story, I think we all understand that CSU really is a disease that makes people suffer. Anything that causes relentless itching, I think of other conditions like scabies, bullous pemphigoid, all of these things that cause relentless itching just destroy people's lives, right? Physical health, work productivity, and psychological health are severely impacted. And again, it's not surprising that CSU has as much impact as other chronic dermatological diseases. One specific call out with CSU is that 55% of patients report sleep difficulties. So if anyone on this call has ever had a baby or just had insomnia, not being able to sleep might be one of the worst things that ever happens to someone. It can make you isolated from social relationships. It can impact your ability to function at work, and it certainly impacts your mental health. Again, when I think about this disease, I kind of think, the times that I've had like one mosquito bite and I'm trying to go to sleep and it's just itching and I'm trying not to scratch it. And then imagine that all over your body, trying to deal with that type of itching. So you can imagine, this disease really has a very high impact on quality of life. And that's why it's important to treat it and kind of treat it effectively and not necessarily just keep sending them to allergy or sending them to other people. This is something like we saw is very easy to diagnose, and it is, well within our scope to treat. Okay, so there is something called refractory CSU, And that just means that current treatments are not working for these patients. So oftentimes, we just know that patients with refractory CSU oftentimes are consulting with their primary care rather than specialists. They do have a tendency to have a delay in diagnosis or a misdiagnosis. They report a lower satisfaction with symptom control, and they do report angioedema a lot of times with a greater impact on their quality of life. They can present with more diverse symptomatic profiles, and again, sleep disruption and lifestyle impacts are key. So I guess, to be said that there is still a big need in this disease state, in that there is an unmet need of patients, particularly with this refractory CSU. And I'm going to turn it over to Jonathan to kind of talk us through the mechanism of disease of CSU. But the key takeaways here is that this is actually a very simple diagnosis. It's something that, with a good thorough history, we can arrive on the diagnosis rather easily. Patients don't need all of this unnecessary testing, and we can make a big impact on patients and their quality of life. It's actually a very satisfying disease to treat when people get better. So I'll turn it over to you, Jonathan, to take us through the mechanism of disease.
Thank you so much, Jane. So Jane won the coin toss on this and managed to get the first half of this presentation, which is fun and familiar. And I know that once we see complex pathophysiology or molecular biology come on the screen, we often take that as a cue to get up and go get our coffee. But please don't abandon me right now, because I promise you this is going to be fairly easy to follow. So the central cell in chronic spontaneous urticaria is a mast cell. A mast cell belongs to the family of leukocytes, specifically granulocytes. And the reason it's called a granulocyte is because it's rich in granules. And in the case of mast cells, these granules contain chemicals such as histamines, cytokines, chemokines, proteases, etc. In most immune cells, one of the first things that happens is the signaling that happens on the surface of that cell across a receptor. And in the mast cell, this is antibody mediated, which can be mediated by IgE antibodies or IgG antibodies. Cross-linking of IgE antibodies can happen by autoallergens, and IgG can cause cross-linking of the receptors either by binding directly to receptor-bound IgE molecules, or by binding directly to the Fc epsilon receptor or the high affinity receptor in itself. Once this spark takes place, it leads to a signaling cascade within the mast cells, and these activated mast cells undergo a process of degranulation, releasing pro-inflammatory mediators, principally histamine, via specific pathways or non-specific pathways such as endogenous peptides, endorphins, or enkephalins. With these release of these mediators, there could be several effects, such as increased capillary permeability leads to the symptoms of wheals. If this increased capillary permeability occurs on deeper layers of skin, it can lead to angioedema. And when these mediators cause stimulation of irritant receptors, that can cause itching, otherwise also known as pruritus. The next slide clearly depicts the central role that mast cells play in CSU. As I mentioned before, there are two mechanisms of stimulation. The first one is IgE that is cross-linked on the surface of the mast cell by autoallergens, and the other is IgG mediated, either against IgE molecules or against the receptor in itself. Now, if it is induced by the first mechanism I spoke about, which is IgE, this is known as the autoallergy mechanism. IgG-mediated autoimmunity is referred to as the autoimmune mechanism. Autoallergy is also referred to as type 1 CSU, and this involves cross-linking of the high affinity IgE receptor via autoreactive IgE molecules. And autoimmune mechanism is otherwise referred to as type 2B CSU, which involves IgG molecules directed either against IgE or IgG. In addition to these signaling cascades that happen on the surface of mast cells, there are other cells that could be involved, such as basophils, and the basophil signaling cascade is very similar to the mast cell. And also, another cell that could play a role is B cells, because autoreactive B cells could produce autoantibodies that cause the symptoms of CSU, because they could be directed against the Fc portion of IgE or the Fc epsilon receptor, thereby promoting spontaneous cellular degranulation. Next slide. As you can see on this slide, there are different kinds of leukocytes and they have different receptors. So, in the case of mast cells, this receptor is known as the Fc epsilon receptor. In the case of macrophages and phagocytes, these receptors could be called Fc gamma receptors. And on B cells, these are called B cell receptors. In all of these cells, no matter what the trigger is on the surface, BTK, which is Bruton's tyrosine kinase, plays a role in the signaling cascade. BTK belongs to the TEC family of kinases and plays an important role in the development and function of leukocytes downstream of the spleen tyrosine kinase, depicted here with the letters SYK or SYK. BTK regulates high affinity immunoglobulin receptor signaling on the surface of mast cells, and this function could position it as an attractive molecule in IgE-mediated diseases. BTK also integrates B cell receptor signaling to regulate B cell development. IgE antibodies bind Fc epsilon receptor on the surface of mast cells and basophils to trigger degranulation and acute inflammation, whereas IgG binds high affinity immunoglobulin G receptor, also known as Fc gamma receptor, on macrophages, plasmacytoid dendritic cells, and natural killer cells to promote cellular activation or phagocytosis. BTK is activated in mast cells upon cross-linking of Fc epsilon receptor 1. This figure shows the central role played by Bruton's tyrosine kinase in mast cell activation, degranulation, and the release of inflammatory mediators, which in turn induces symptoms of chronic spontaneous urticaria. The mast cell activation, as I mentioned earlier, could occur through the cross-linking of immunoglobulin E by autoallergens or by IgG, or cross-linking of high affinity IgE receptors by the IgG molecule itself. And BTK is a central positive regulator of Fc epsilon receptor mediated mast cell activation. Now, the guidelines that we had in America for the management of CSU were fairly dated. They were from early 2010, 2014. And so there was an update and revision of the international guidelines for the diagnosis and management of CSU. This updated 2022 version of the International Urticaria Guidelines cover the definition of chronic spontaneous urticaria, and they also outline expert-guided and evidence-based diagnostic and therapeutic approaches for CSU. They followed a GRADE methodology, and it's important to note that these guidelines were actually endorsed by US organizations, including the AAD. Now, this slide shows the stepwise treatment guidelines for chronic urticaria, and this has been adapted from the updated 2022 guidelines that I just referred to. It's important to note that the recommended framework for this is assess, act, and adjust. So under assess, you have diagnostic procedures, comorbidities assessment, and as Jane mentioned, one of the comorbidities that could occur with CSU is CIndU. We assess severity, and for that, we use patient-reported outcome measures, the most common of which are the Urticaria Control Test and the Urticaria Activity Score 7, otherwise known as the UAS7. We assess patient preferences of medications. We also try to anticipate what side effects of treatment the patient could experience and whether these side effects could affect their normal functioning in life. For example, if a medication were to cause sedation in a patient who has chronic spontaneous urticaria and is a long-distance truck driver, that would probably not be favorable to support his quality of life. A second step is acting, and for that, it would mean initiating treatment or modifying treatment and also treating comorbidities. Like I mentioned, CIndU can be a comorbidity of CSU. So if you have a patient who has chronic spontaneous urticaria, but at the same time, they have CIndU that is triggered by cold or heat or pressure, just letting them know that, you know, you can avoid some of your hives by avoiding these triggers is helpful. We look at non-pharmacological interventions, especially in CIndU, but we also take the time to educate the patient on what they could expect. At follow-up visits, it's very important to adjust treatment. So we step up treatment in a timely manner if the patient is inadequately controlled. We change medications if patients are experiencing side effects or if their preferences change. And we step down medications if symptoms are resolved or if it has been 3 to 6 months that the patient has had good control. The treatment aims to alleviate the physical, psychological, work productivity impairment of CSU on patients. And that is so important to assess because often we ask your patient, how are you doing? And they say, oh, I'm doing okay. But we should take the time to investigate, is the CSU affecting their psychological state of mind? As Jane mentioned, things such as anxiety, depression could be quite common in CSU. And we have to treat the CSU to an extent that it also helps improve their mood. It needs to help improve their work productivity and their work attendance. And it should help them live in a quality of life that would that they find acceptable. They should be able to do the activities and hobbies that they would love to do. The current treatment targets mast cell mediators or activators, and it's important to note that only about 50% of patients respond sufficiently to first-line therapy. Therefore, assess, act, and adjust is the recommended framework to manage patients with urticaria. There are certain management challenges that we face in CSU. We all know that a short course of systemic steroids could be used in rescue cases of acute exacerbation of CSU, just in the example that Jane gave of her patient who was a PA and went to the ER and received a short course of steroids and had relief of symptoms. But we all also know that it is not recommended to use steroids for long-term management because of their adverse event profile. Late diagnosis, which may impact identification of other comorbid or masking diseases, can not only just affect the quality of life of the patient and delay care, but it also has its attendant healthcare utilization costs, as Jane mentioned. One of the biggest challenges in CSU is that there's a paucity of reliable biomarkers. It's always nice when you have a disease for which there is a biomarker and you know that looking at that biomarker, if it's high, you have a diagnosis. It's important to note that there's a paucity of reliable biomarkers to assess disease severity and predict treatment response in CSU. However, as Jane mentioned also, that CSU is a pretty straightforward clinical diagnosis by just trying to get a good history and a good physical without the need for a very significant workup. We can easily arrive at the diagnosis of chronic spontaneous urticaria, and treat the patient appropriately so that they get good relief of symptoms. So, in summary, CSU is defined by itch, wheals, hives, and/or angioedema that lasts more than 6 weeks. Jane took us through the definitions of urticaria, and as we know, urticaria lasting more than 6 weeks is called chronic urticaria. And if it is spontaneous without a known trigger, it is known as chronic spontaneous urticaria. And if there is an inducible trigger, that is known as chronic inducible urticaria, commonly referred to as CIndU. Patients who do not respond to antihistamine therapy often report significantly decreased quality of life. We saw this in the slide that Jane presented when she was referring to refractory urticaria, which is refractory to antihistamines. I think most of us will find this to be very impactful that CSU has a similar impact on quality of life as other dermatological diseases. Now, when we think of psoriasis, atopic derm, or psoriatic arthritis, there is no doubt in our mind that these diseases have a significant burden on the patient. But we need to recognize that CSU can have a similar impact as these diseases such as psoriasis, atopic derm, and psoriatic arthritis. The updated 2022 international guidelines promote the accurate diagnosis of CSU, mostly just through thorough history taking and good physical exams, without unnecessary investigations that not only delay diagnosis, but also increase the cost burden for the patient without improvement in outcomes. When we talked about pathophysiology, I mentioned that dermal mast cells and basophils are central cells in the pathophysiology of CSU and play a major role. When activated, these cells release mediators such as histamine that cause urticaria symptoms, which includes wheals and angioedema. BTK, or Bruton's tyrosine kinase, is a central signaling molecule and it mediates mast cell degranulation downstream of Fc epsilon receptor 1, also known as the high affinity IgE receptor that sits on the surface of mast cells. And thus, BTK plays a very important role in pathophysiology of both known CSU endotypes, which are type 1 CSU mediated by IgE and type 2 or autoimmune CSU mediated by IgG antibodies. With this, we thank you for your time and your interest in learning more about chronic spontaneous urticaria. Although the format of this presentation does not allow us to take questions at this time, our information is readily available to the organizers of this event, and we would very much encourage you to reach out to either Jane or myself with any questions you have pertaining to this presentation. Thank you all, and have a good evening.